Well, hello, everyone. Thank you again for coming. This is our fourth in our series of discussions with rabbis and people involved in the Jewish communities for places that Torah in Motion goes. Torah in Motion I've been leading the trip there it's almost 10 years. In fact, it was my first trip, Central Europe. The first time I was there, Rabbi Oberlander was not around, although I knew him before then, but every trip subsequent to that, and there's people on who've been on our trips. I see the names. We've always gone on Shabbos afternoon where he's opened his home and spoken to us. And God willing, we are returning. I know there's chaos in that part of the world now, but we are returning. The plan is to return this summer, and emails will go out. You can go to the website and you can register. There's an early bird special, and we hope, Amir Sashem, that Rabbi Oberlander will be with us. We'll hear today a little bit about what's going on there and how it's changed since he's been there. So let me just briefly say, because there's a lot you could say about Rabbi Oberlander, and you can read his biography on the Torah in Motion website, he really has made Torah Judaism, and not just Torah Judaism, but Judaism as a whole, perhaps you could say, in Hungary the last 30 years. Although, as I think we'll learn, it wasn't like other places. Even though it was a communist country, we're going to hear some of his history in a minute. He, in addition to being a rabbi, he's also and a leader of the community. He's also known as a posek, as well as an academic scholar. He's a PhD. He's known for those of us in the field as the world's expert on the forged Yerushalmi Kodshim that maybe we'll talk about in a little later if we have some time at the end, and as well as many other things. So, without any further ado, I introduce Rabbi Baruch Oberlander of Budapest, and I want to begin by first asking him if he could briefly tell us about his background, what led him to come to Hungary.
Hi, welcome everybody. I don't know which part of the world, but I guess I'm all over.
Yes, we have people from America, Canada, Israel, everywhere.
Wow, okay. Welcome to the whole world. What made my wife and me come to Hungary? There's two answers to the question. Background information, both of my parents are Holocaust survivors from Hungary. They also spoke Hungarian at home. Not only Hungarian, they spoke Yiddish mainly, but also spoke a lot of Hungarian. My grandparents both spoke also Hungarian. So that's from my side. My wife's side, she's also from Hungarian descent, although she's like one generation later because, she didn't speak Hungarian, but she heard Hungarian from her parents, from her mother and grandparents. So that's the background information. But what made us really come is the Lubavitcher Rebbe. We were just married. We were married for 30 days. When I asked the Rebbe if he thinks the idea that somebody brought up, the Rabbi Biederman and the Chabad rabbi from Vienna, our neighbor, I asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe if he thinks it's a good idea, and the Rebbe says, go. Go if there is a kosher mikveh over there. So we checked the mikveh was kosher. And 5 months after we were married, we ended up in Budapest. For my parents, it was a very strange experience that the son went back to the place from where they fled after the Holocaust, when communism started. For my wife's grandmother, she didn't want to hear about it. This is a Russia country. This is like this is a wicked country. Why are you going back over there? You only remember the Holocaust from here. But since we came in August of 1989, and since then, we are here, started off by ourselves. But since then, many more families joined us. Today, Chabad in Hungary is more than half of the rabbis in Hungary today are from Chabad, and a lot of good things.
Yeah, we'll get to that actually later, right? But to explain, when you got to Hungary, what was it like? I mean, could you be an Orthodox Jew? Were there daily minyanim? And how does it differ from other places in the Soviet bloc?
In Hungary, the communism, what they call, I think they say, the Khrushchev said it, that Hungary is only goulash communism. meaning it wasn't so strict communism. So they never ever closed physically locked and closed the shuls. They let them open, and unfortunately they were very clever, smart, that they closed the Jewish schools in the beginning of the 1950s. So in the 1980s, a lot of shuls closed by themselves because there was nobody attending there. Because if the children didn't go to school, the Jewish school in the 1950s, or in the 1980s, there were no more members in many, many synagogues. So we came here, there was the synagogues that were still operating were mainly with older people that still learned before the Holocaust or right after the Holocaust. And so they always allowed the synagogues to operate. They allowed to have a shoichet ritual slaughterer. They allowed to have rabbis. They had a rabbinical seminary, non-Orthodox rabbinical seminary was more for a little communist propaganda to show that, you know, that they have freedom of religion. But they had it. It was operating. So that was.
Of course, this is also the era of Glasnost. I don't think you would have been able to go there 10 years before.
They were not Orthodox communists.
Yeah.
They had no problem giving people visas to come and visit. I mean, it wasn't like going to the Soviet Union, you had to apply and a whole cumbersome, you know, process. You went. I remember when the Rebbe told me we should go to Hungary, I called up the Hungarian embassy. How long does it take to get a visa? So they said, there's two options. There's the express option and the not express option. I said, so what is it? Express means 2 hours. And non-express is the next day. And that's how it was. They didn't make any problems for visitors, for tourists. They were happy for tourists. So again, this was not like the Soviet Union because they were not happy for tourists. So they didn't give tourists an easy time.
But you went to set up a shul and religious life. That's what I was wondering. In earlier years, maybe it wouldn't have been so simple.
But, you know, I want to tell you, a few weeks after we came, it officially became a multi-party system. So we're here just the last few weeks.
Now, could tell us that today, give us some, first of all, the population of Jews in Hungary, and where can you find Jews? What cities, the big cities, where you can find a minyan on Shabbos today?
So like this. The biggest part of the Jews outside of Budapest were killed during the Holocaust. The Budapest ghetto survived with some 70,000 Jews. So after the war, there were, you know, a lot of survivors came back from Auschwitz, from different concentration camps, from forced labor camps. So also outside of Budapest had Jewish communities, but Budapest had a lot more Jews. Then by the revolution of 1956, where Hungary tried to leave the Soviet bloc, there was a few weeks of chaos over here. It was then outside of Budapest, there was a very strong anti-Semitic talk and everything, like, you know, whoa, too many Jews stayed over, why didn't we finish you in Auschwitz and such different things. Over those few weeks, a lot of Jews left Hungary. Even those that didn't leave Hungary, a lot of them moved to Budapest or to different big cities. So today, practically, Hungary has an estimated, nobody knows for exact numbers, estimated about 80,000 Jews. But practically, it means Jews in Budapest. Outside of Budapest, there's few Jews. Debrecen, which is a big city, has a few hundred Jews. Miskolc has also a little less, also a few hundred Jews. And then come very small communities with 50, 60 Jews. So practically, we're talking about 80,000 Jews. I would say 77,000 are in Budapest and 3,000 are all over Hungary.
And if you take, for example, Budapest, you have any idea, like, how many Shomer Shabbos would you find today in Budapest?
How many Shomer Shabbos? A lot more than 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I would say probably a few hundred. Probably a few hundred.
Now, obviously, intermarriage must be a huge problem there. For the non-Orthodox, what percentages are we talking about?
Very, very, very high percentage. Very high percentage of intermarriage. Because if there was no Jewish schools and there was no, so where did they meet? So the first generation after the Holocaust, a lot of them naturally married Jews and they were looking for each other. And as time went, another generation, it they intermarried very, very high numbers. Very, very high numbers, meaning that most of the time they are in synagogue. There's so many people that we call up to the Torah, Ben Avraham, the son of Avraham, because, you know, the father was not Jewish. It's Moshe Ben Avraham and Yaakov Ben Avraham and Yitzchak Ben Avraham. Everybody's Ben Avraham. And finally, my son-in-law is Yosef Yitzchak Ben Avraham, because his father is Avraham. So somebody just said, make sure to say Ben Harav Avraham, so we should know that his father is Jewish.
Now, I mean, Hungary, I think, is different, correct me if I'm wrong, than America. In America, even the non-Orthodox, their children are routinely circumcised, the boys. In Hungary, do the non-Orthodox circumcise their children?
Most of the Jews in Hungary are not circumcised. And that's thanks to the Holocaust. That during the Holocaust, when people had false papers like my father and his family, if there was the smallest suspicion that somebody is Jewish, they used to check if he had a bris, if he's circumcised, and like this, they knew that he's Jewish. So because of this, a lot of the Jews here in Hungary after the Holocaust, they were afraid of the another Holocaust that will come. They did not circumcise their children. So one of the things that we're all constantly busy here is making, convincing people and organizing for them circumcisions at an older age. The oldest one that I had was 76, I think. Wow. I was 76 when he made his bris mitzvah. He was born right after the Holocaust.
And you allow anesthesia, at least local anesthesia, correct?
It's local anesthesia.
Yeah. Do you have a Beis Din that does conversions as well, locally in Budapest?
I am the Av Beis Din. I have a Beis Din, and we do conversions, marriages, divorces, if needed. We kosher supervision. Anything that is needed, we try to fulfill the need.
Okay, I'll get, guys, everyone listening, I'll get to the questions at the end. I'll read them out. I'm just curious, because we spoke to Rabbi Tzaini about this also. What is your shita like when it comes to children? If a family that's not observant but that's going to shul wants to adopt a child, do you hold like Rav Moshe that you can convert the child? I don't know if the Rabbanut accepts that. It's a difficult circumstance for people who are not really observant, but they want to adopt a child and it can't find a Jewish child to adopt.
Adoption is not so common over here. I don't know if it's common elsewhere, but surely that's not the problem. Usually, my opinion on this matter is that somebody that doesn't want to commit for a full Jewish life, then why should he convert? There's no reason that he should convert and not fulfill the mitzvah. So better that he should be a fan of the Jewish people and the Jewish religion and from the outside and read a lot of Jewish books and et cetera, et cetera. No reason for him to get complicate his life.
Now, I was referring to children, not to the person.
The Jewish same thing is also with children. The children, if the parents are not ready to give the children a Jewish education and keep them in a religious environment, so why make them Jewish and just complicate their lives? They have to get married to Jews and they have to keep Shabbat, and they're not interested in keeping Shabbat. They don't know what Shabbat is. So, you know.
Okay, you mentioned education. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Jewish education in Budapest, both your institution and if there's other institutions?
There's a few Jewish day schools now here in Hungary. Meaning there's the Chabad school, which my wife is the principal, starts from preschool to high school with approximately 160 children. There's the Lauder school, which is a not religious school, but gives kosher food to the kids. They have a lot of kids, they're probably like 200 or more. The school, there's also there's two community schools. One of them is called the Reichman School. One of them is called the Scheiber School. The Reichman School is what used to be a very big school. Now it's shrunk. It's a very small school now. The Scheiber School is the non-Orthodox community, the Malo community's school. This is, children education. We do a lot of adult education. Also, besides teaching different classes, different courses, I also teach at university accredited courses. From September of 1990, I started a course of Jewish law at law school here, and approximately 8 or 10 years ago, I started the course of Jewish medical ethics at Semmelweis University. School of Medicine. So that's and obviously it's in the internet. And
does the government help fund your day school and the other day schools, or through tax money?
Government. Supports all the schools in Hungary per kids. You know, every kid they get a certain amount, and religious schools get a bigger amount because they want to sponsor religious schools.
Now, because of your official role in Hungary, this may be a bit of a putting you on the spot here, but and you also received one of Hungary's highest awards. I think it's called the Order of Merit, but. I can tell you, and you know this is no secret, that Jews in America, many of them, especially more liberal Jews, but not just only them, read the news and have this image of Hungary as a place not just where anti-Semitism is rampant, but also that this is something that's tolerated, and if not tolerated, even encouraged by the leader of your country, Orban, and he's often portrayed, despite his unquestioned support for the state of Israel, he's often portrayed as almost like a neo-fascist. And I know that your experience is completely different, and living there, you have a very different perspective on it. So if you would like, just please explain how you, having lived on the ground for 30 years, see the situation, first of all, with anti-Semitism in Hungary, and also with this government and this leader, how you view this.
You're 100% right. I have a completely different perspective on this subject. I wish the Jews in France, in Belgium, in England, that they should have such rampant anti-Semitism as we have over here. It's calm, it's quiet. We go on the street. I send my children or grandchildren by themselves on the street, not afraid from nobody. It's safe. They don't attack anybody, not like the countries that I just mentioned. I hope and I pray that the whole Europe should be in such a situation, and surely that Hungary should stay at this level. The government, I must say, is very helpful, meaning they make sure there should be law and order. And if there's, you know, they help, they sponsor, they so I don't think that Hungary is worse than anywhere in Europe. And not only I don't think there's worse, it's surely much better than anywhere in Europe, which doesn't mean that there's no anti-Semitism in politics, in talkbacks on the internet, but as long as it's quiet and it's calm, nobody would be afraid of, I think it's we're doing very, very well.
And how do you, I mean, there was a lot of news in the West about, you know, signs and attacks. I saw them myself against George Soros, and many people seeing this as sort of underhanded anti-Semitism. Do you at all, again, see this, the government, as a purveyor of anti-Semitism in any way?
I don't think so. I'm not convinced that Soros himself considers himself Jewish. And really, I hate going into the politics side of it.
Yeah.
I try to keep myself to the rabbinic side of it. And if it's quiet and it's calm and it's good and the government is helpful, then we're doing well.
Well, let me, before I move on to the next thing, I will ask one question I see that someone put in the chat, and I think it is relevant because, I mean, one of your Talmidim is very involved in this and you've been in the news, and that's the controversy of the Holocaust Museum, where, again, we're hearing two different things in America. So someone asked if you could just briefly discuss the controversy over this. Why should there be a controversy of a Holocaust Museum? And is this just a mountain over a molehill that people trying to create a problem where there really isn't?
This Holocaust Museum that started off didn't start off in the right way. There were different backs and forths, and there were no agreements. But when the government transferred responsibility of this new Holocaust museum to the Amish Jewish community, and it's up to the Amish Jewish community to create the content and everything. There's no, I don't see any reason for any controversy, if not for local pity politics.
Okay, now, serving as a rabbi there, I'm just curious, have there been any, like, unique, well, there must be unique halachic issues that have come up? You have people who just find out they're Jewish, or any, does anything just stand out to you, just like a strange story that, really can illustrate the uniqueness of serving in a place like Budapest, a lot of problems that come up that you've had to deal with?
Obviously, every place has its unique problems, and you have to come up with unique solutions. I became a full-time researcher, family tree researcher, because, you know, some people come to say that they're Jewish, and we have to we have to prove it, meaning I could say that they have to prove it, but I have to help them and guide them that they should be able to prove their Judaism, because sometimes they are honest and they don't really know, but they heard the little few things here and there. And, you know, we have to help them find. And thank God, Baruch Hashem, that from 1895 till 1945, really till 1950, the government had, you know, like in Russia today, that every document, every official document has also religion. In Hungary, they had it from 1895, means for 50 years, 50, 55 years, which is very, very helpful, because a lot of the Jewish community records were destroyed, especially outside of Budapest, but the government records were never destroyed. So there's always a way to follow up. I went to in Israel, to the leading poskim, Rabbi Volzner, and he said, no problem, you can prove Judaism with government records, and you could prove Judaism also with the analog non-Orthodox community records. You just have to know how to do it. But you know, but they are very, very youthful, and hundreds and maybe thousands of Jews got you know, papers from me that the Jewish, they were able to marry in Israel or anywhere in the world because we proved that they're Jewish.
How would you know it wasn't a patrilineal Jew from before the war? There was a lot of intermarriage in Hungary.
Okay, so that's why you have to check all these things. I'm saying there's a lot of research going into this, but at least there's a way. There is what to research after the community records were destroyed. That's how I got to know the famous anti-Semite, you know, Semitic political leader, Jonat Segedi, who turns out that he was a leader of the anti-Semitic racist party, and turns out that from his mother's side, he was completely halachically Jewish, and I accepted him. I was teaching him for many years after I made research on him. Meaning, first, his friends, the anti-Semites, did the research on him, and I checked it, and they did a good job. They really proved that he was Jewish, that he was halachically Jewish.
And then he became a, you know, I guess you'd say a member of the community, or certainly a very public person.
He became a student of mine. A student of mine.
That was a big story. We all remember that.
Well, maybe some of them even watched his that film.
Yeah, they made a film. One exciting thing that people will find interesting is that an Erev rite is going to be going up soon in Budapest.
I really hope that by Pesach, by the first day of Pesach, which is Friday night, we can have an Erev. If not, then a few weeks later, hopefully.
How long have you been working on this, and was it difficult?
It's a project in a few years in the making.
The whole area, or just around your section?
It's the biggest, almost the whole of Pest. You know, the Pest side is the one side of the Danube, and now we're not doing the Buddha side yet. The Pest side is the easier side, because you know we're able to see that 80% of the area is up already.
Okay, and look, now that things are getting better, hopefully this summer will be lots of tourists will come there. Of course, I need to ask you also, while you're on the border with the Ukraine, and I don't know, if it's not like the Polish border, it's not so long, but are there refugees coming in to Hungary? Are you having involvement near the border with Jews coming?
Yes, refugees are coming. As of now, most of the refugees that are coming are going to the countryside in Keresztúr, where there's usually tourists coming all the time to pray by the grave of Reb Shaila, the famous Reb Shaila of Keresztúr. And somehow they try to stick over there. But families also started coming here to Budapest, and we're trying to accommodate them. And just a few days ago, by in evening prayers, there was a family with two little kids praying next to me. My tears came from my eyes. They were 9 and 10 years old, and they were davening, "Amen Yeshme Rabban Shema Yisrael," and they were not, their father was not a rabbi, and it was just kids that grew up in Ukraine, had a good Jewish school over there, and they were davening very, very nicely. I was like really surprised, pleasantly surprised.
So we hope
we try to help them as much as possible, and hopefully it's not going to take too long. I must say that the Hungarian government is doing very, 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 very also very accommodative. They just let them in, no problems, no visa processing, et cetera, and they're coming, and you know they're running for their lives.
Okay, so I'll just say, because it's relevant to what we said already, although I will get in 15 minutes maybe read the questions, but I see some that are already relevant. Well, first of all, Ruth asks what language you teach at the university. I'm assuming it's Hungarian.
I am teaching in Hungarian. I must admit, when I started teaching the course in 1990. I knew a poor Hungarian, so I prepared as much as I can prepare, and I asked them if they prefer a decent English or a poor Hungarian. They said, no, a poor Hungarian is better than a decent English. And it was very helpful for me, because every week I got better and better at it. So I'm really thankful for that, that they preferred the poor Hungarian of mine, 99. But today I speak Hungarian, I write Hungarian, I publish books in Hungarian. By the way, my dissertation is coming out in the Hungarian version of it in 2 weeks. It's being published.
Okay, so we hope also for the Hebrew version. By the way, everyone who wants to hear about Rabbi Oberlander's work on the Forge Yerushalmi Kodshim, you can just Google his name and Yeshiva University. He has, or I'll send you the link if you want. He has a wonderful talk that he gave a few years ago, 5 years ago, about on this whole issue at Yeshiva University, and you can watch it and learn all about that fascinating episode in Jewish history, which I have to say that much of it, Rabbi Oberlander really excavated it and uncovered a lot of the unknown stuff, including manuscripts and letters. So very important work. I also have a private question. We speak about anti-Semitism, and someone asks, like today, do the shuls need security? Before you answer that, I just have to say something. No, for all the, I don't know if it's any different than when I was there last 3 years ago, but I would tell the people, we'd go to the Kaczynski shul, these people have all been to France and other places in Europe where you have to be buzzed in and there's, armed guards and everything. And I would say to them, we're going to go to the Kaczynski shul now and we'll just walk right in and out. And everyone was shocked, at least then, until a few years ago, no armed guards, nothing. What is it like today? And maybe that was foolish that the Kaczynski shul did not have armed guards. Certainly the Dohani shul has guards. But what's your feeling about the necessity for security? And
no real need for guards over here. And that's why in all the synagogues, you could just walk in, they don't make any problems. But, it's always better. So we have guards, so people should feel better. Calmer, but there's no real need for guards. Baruch Hashem, I hope it's going to stay like that.
I mean, we have guards in America now, so it's all our suburban shuls, most of them.
Well, in America, things happen, but thank God nothing happened over here.
But someone also has asked me, is it the case that you're describing Budapest and me, which is a more, younger, you have a university, more liberal, but if you go into the small towns, would you have a different perspective on Jews than you would in a city which is a more international, cosmopolitan place?
I can't tell you from experience, because I don't live in the countryside. Mm-hmm. But for example, we have Chabad Rabbi in Debrecen. He's the rabbi of the community over there. And he's also not complaining about anti-Semitism over there. We have a Chabad rabbi in Mishkos. He's also not complaining.
I mean, you're not seeing graffiti and stuff in newspapers and things like that. That's great if you're not. That's a
nothing major. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing major.
Mm-hmm. Someone else also.
I'm not saying that it isn't, but nothing to nothing major. Well, I remember going in Williamsburg and in Brooklyn on the street, and a car stops by on Shabbos, and the guy opens the window and says, "Heil Hitler." I remember I was a kid, I asked my father, what did he want? What did he say? And why did he say it? My father says, "Why? You think he's a smart person? Why do you think I should know why he wanted to say it? Because he's an idiot."
Do you, for people who I guess become more religious and more involved, someone also wants to know, do you try to direct them that the place to go then would be Eretz Yisrael or maybe America? Or no, your feeling is that Hungary is a place you can be a Ben Torah, you can have a completely religious life there as well in Hungary?
It's a good question, and obviously it has to be answered by every family is different. Obviously, young people have to go to yeshiva or to go seminaries to learn. But if you don't learn, you don't study, you don't know. That's why young people I try, to give them the moral support, and that they should go to yeshiva and to seminaries and to high schools in other places. Afterwards, if they want to live in Hungary, they could absolutely live in Hungary with a full from Jewish life in Hungary. I'm not saying that the from community is not that big yet. but it's growing.
Mm-hmm. Someone I'll read some of the questions, and then I'm because I want to make sure we have some time for them. And then, of course, I have some more things if we have time. But let me just ask them now because we have a lot. Someone asks, is it true that the Jewish community in Hungary today is basically 100% survivors' descendants?
Who else? It was a Holocaust over here. Well, if the question is, if it's Jews that came from different countries, small, very small percentage. Few Israelis here, and very few American Jews. No, Hungarian Jews of Hungary are or themselves Holocaust survivors, the oldest ones of them, or their children and grandchildren. No question. We had a Holocaust over here. So who else should be over here if not Holocaust survivors, children and grandchildren?
And you don't have that many Israelis, just or Russian Jews?
Israelis, we have a good few hundred medical students in Budapest, in Debrecen, and maybe in some other cities. Let's say, I think it's like 700-800 medical students. And then we have some Israeli business people. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about thousands of them.
Now, someone asks about, understandably, after World War II, many Jews were wary of identifying as Jewish and having their names in databases. Is it possible that really you're underestimating the number of Jews, even by many tens of thousands?
Listen, if you're talking about how many Jews are in the registry, we don't have 80,000 Jews. So the 80,000 Jews is already an estimate based on different research. And 80,000 seems a good estimate. Could be that it's 90,000, fine. Could be it's 100,000, yeah, could be. Could be also that it's 70,000. But 80,000 is a good estimate.
Shmuel asks if you can just say something about the Yabek Party. If that is a threat or what, is there anything to be concerned about them?
The Yabek Party is the anti-Semitic party that I mentioned before, that the vice president of that party happened to be Jewish, and then he joined the Jewish community. Not as somebody that converted, but as being Jewish. The Yabek Party is not that strong, so I don't think any question of them coming to power or something like that. Unfortunately, the opposition now made peace, meaning that with the Yabek and the anti-Semitic party, that they became part of the coalition of the opposition to the government. I don't think that's... that's a very good development.
Okay. Someone asked about George Soros, but you did speak about that. This is an interesting question. Rivka asks, do you find any Hungarians, I guess privately or in a more national sense, expressing remorse for Hungarian anti-Semitism during the Holocaust and earlier? I know this was an issue because there have been... rehabilitations, as it were, of people, politicians who were involved in, problematic, let's say, incidents during the war. So is there a sense in Hungary of remorse or of coming to terms with that the government was a collaborator?
It's not so simple, because some people obviously are embarrassed. Some people say that since Hungary was occupied by Germany, so that's why it's not, because it's Hungary of today has no moral bills to pay, which is surely not right, because Hungary, they made the Jewish laws, the Zsidó törvény, the Jewish laws, in much before Hungary was occupied by Germany. Numerous closes in the 1920s and then the 1938 and 1941. So
is this spoken about though, or is this too problematic really to raise?
It's spoken about. Could be spoken even more, and it's a constant ongoing dialogue. that is still going on, and we're nowhere by the end of it.
Now, a very interesting question just came in that, you're a leader, Jewish leader, and in many places, Jewish leaders, they, part of their role is also interreligious dialogue. I mean, the chief rabbi speaks to the bishop or things like that. Have you had any, are the religious figures of Hungary, the Christian religious figures, of any significance in that you'd have need to deal with them? Have you had that experience at all, or is it really not relevant to your situation?
I don't think it's very important to invest too much energy in the interreligious things. I think everybody should invest in their own community and try to build it up and try to make it stronger and stronger. But obviously we are in contact when we need to be in contact. Matter of fact, the Cardinal of Budapest attended my lectures at university for a semester.
Just like, and I don't know if you want to touch this. You can punt it if you wish, but the same person asked about intra-religious. So I guess we could say the Orthodox relationship with the non-Orthodox. Is it basically, is it Shalom Bal Yisrael, or is it full of conflict without getting into details?
Since I came here, we were always friendly with everybody, with the Orthodox and the non-Orthodox communities, and obviously with all the Jews, no question. If they belong to the community or they don't belong to the community, most of the Jews don't belong to any community, and I am in good contact with everybody. But there is local politics, and a lot of times you get the impression that the non-Orthodox community is trying to attack and for no real good reason.
Well, would you work with non-Orthodox Jewish groups in an organizational way for camps or mikvahs or things like that, or that's not your hashkafa?
It never really comes up. It never really comes up in such a way. But first of all, the local Jewish community over here, even the non-Orthodox community, is not ideologically opposed to authentic Orthodox Judaism. They don't really have a different. They are not Orthodox, but they don't have any shittas, no opinions, and on the major, different opinions than the Orthodox opinion. They're not religious, and they're not Orthodox. So I don't see any problem really. Working with them, that they should, if they're ready to help, then why not? Baruch haba. I don't see any major problem with that.
Okay, let me just say this. I see two more questions, and then I'll maybe wrap it up with one or two more. I don't know if you can answer this one, but someone asked, have you heard from any of these refugees about that they feel anti-Semitism in the Ukraine?
I must say, I didn't have a chance of really sitting down with them and debrief them. And no, I didn't have a chance for that. I hope I won't get a chance. And they're going to go back as soon as possible. Things are going to quiet down. But I'm afraid that I'm still going to have a chance to talk to a lot of them.
And I see two more questions. One is, is the typical Hungarian Jew, though, more secular? Or neo-log? I mean, are they completely secular?
No question, secular. Yeah. Most of the Jews are unaffiliated secular here. And going back to even before the Second World War years of the Enlightenment, then came the Holocaust, and then came communism. So at the end of the day, the Hungarian Jews are very secular.
And Shmuel asked similarly, the Christians, are they also, I mean, is Hungary also very much post-Christian society, or do they identify with religion, the young people, or most people?
My impression is that they do identify to a certain extent, obviously.
Okay. Let me just ask, as we come to a close, also, and in the few minutes we have left, if people want to send in, you can certainly ask questions. You know, you mentioned that you're going to be coming out with your book on the forged Yerushalmi Kodshim. What about your book of responsa? For all those years living in Budapest, you must have had all sorts of interesting questions that you had to write about and engage with different Gedolei Yisrael on halachic issues. Do you have a responsa that you'd like to put out and on these matters that you have to deal with?
Matter of fact, I wanted to come out with my book of responsa already 2-3 years ago, and it keeps being pushed off because of different things that have to be dealt with on a day-to-day basis. I really hope within a year I should be able to go and publish.
And when we come to Budapest this summer, God willing, the restaurants are still there. They survived COVID. Everything is, everything will be good.
But let me just say another thing about Hungarian Jews. They might be secular, but they're very intelligent and educated. Meaning, and you sit down with somebody and you study with him, you could see that they really enjoy it and they get turned on by it.
So I guess my final question is, are you hopeful about the future? We've spoken, the last couple of people we've spoken to from Italy and Greece, even in Morocco, you're our fourth. Each one of them that we spoke to was not hopeful. When I asked them, do you see a future for Jewish life in their countries? They all agreed that the young people are not staying. They didn't see any future. Hungary, I think you might have a different opinion. So I'll ask you, and we'll end with this. Do you see a future of Jewish life in Hungary? Are the young people staying?
If you talk about staying or going to Israel, the young people are not going to Israel. They're going to Israel in very small numbers. But a lot of young people leave to different European countries, and for financial reasons, you know, to get better jobs, better pay. So do I envision Hungarian Jewry of 50,000 religious Jews in 5 years? No. But will there be a strong Jewish life, meaning part of it is going to be a strong frum community? And then a part of it is going to be those people that are not religious, but they're, you know, connected to the Jewish community. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's very good to hear. And as I said, anyone who wishes, we hope to God willing return to Budapest. You can come see it for yourself, the amazing things that have happened there, especially when you consider what the place was like, 30 years ago. Rabbi Oberlander is very busy. I know he's very busy with his hand in all sorts of things around the country. So I really want to thank him. And I know everyone with us thanks you for taking the time out to just giving some insights into the Jewish community in Hungary today in your role there. So with that, again, just thank you very much. And as I said, this will be on YouTube for those who are not with us live. And if you need to reach Rabbi Oberlander for anything, if you're going there, there's reasons you come from Hungary and you want to find out anything you want to know. He's always very helpful, and you can email me and I will give you the information. So Rabbi Oberlander, thank you very, very much for this, and good night to you.
My pleasure. I hope I was able to add something.
Very much so. And I have to have you back also and speak about maybe on one of your specialties.
Hope to see you in the summer.
God willing.
And as of now, we're working very hard with the refugees. You know, we have to accommodate them.
Yeah. Okay. Good night, everyone.